Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
I like the way sparkling earrings.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Ken Dalecki's here, too, because if he wasn't, it would just be me, because Joan Pride is out of here. She took a week off, and Ken Dalecki is Deputy Managing Editor at the Kiplinger Washington Editors. He's our good friend. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. I love your background music, by the way. I'm a big Eagles fan.
Yeah, no kidding. It's good to have you back on the show, and happy 4th of July week.
Thank you. Same to you.
Happy Independence, America. Pretty exciting week, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a big day here, of course, with the big fireworks and everything. Mall's going to open at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, and it'll be a big crowd down here.
Well, it's cool when the 4th is on on a Friday, because it sort of it really gives us a good weekend to have some fun and relax, and hopefully not just barbecue, but also and shoot fireworks, but also to reflect on really what this whole day means to Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
When you think back on what was going on 27 years ago, you think back on what those guys were doing. You know, I just had a guy on the show this week. Walter Isaacson's written a book on Benjamin Franklin, and he was talking to us about what Thomas Jefferson was doing right about now, writing the Declaration of Independence, and that Benjamin Franklin, he actually asked Benjamin Franklin to come over and help him edit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. He put the final touches on it.
He did, and one of the things that he did was to say the part about we hold these truths to be self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Jefferson had something a little more, he had sort of a theological reference there, and Franklin said, you know what, I think we need to make this a little more secular and a little more broad-based, and very interesting, you know, I've actually seen the document, he put his editor's pen to Jefferson's work there, but it's just so cool to think about what those guys were doing in those days, isn't it?
Well, it was all on the line, wasn't it?
Everything was on the line.
It was revolutionary.
Their lives were on the line.
That's right.
So you think about what those guys did, it's just amazing. I like to think about what would they do right now if we plopped them down in the middle of Washington D.C. How would they behave? How would they act? Would they be happy?
I think they'd be pretty proud of what's happened, you know?
I think they would too, don't you?
I think we've come closer to the ideals of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
I think that, don't you think they'd be surprised too? Don't you think they'd be surprised that it actually is still in existence? Some of the things that they said, the fundamental things they said, are basically still there and basically the foundation of everything that we do?
And I would say improved on for the most part.
For a lot. Now, there are some things they won't like, and of course there are things that we don't like, but basically, I think they'd be surprised. I think if you ask any of them, will what you're doing today still be important 200 years from now? I think they would say, well, I don't know how it could be.
Well, I don't know. I tend to think they felt it was a fundamental shift in how mankind rules itself, and it has maybe the thing that would impress them the most is how it's spread around the world.
That's a biggie right there, no question about it. Ken, let's get into the letter and talk a little bit about some of the things that Kiplinger has to say about what's happening in the world this week. And one of the things is you guys say that manufacturing is finally on the mend.
Yes, finally. You had a rough year. Well, it's had a number of rough years. Actually, manufacturing output declined last year about 1%. And we think that this year we'll finally see some improvement, a 1% increase this year, and then picking up steam next year to about 3% in factory output. Number of factors are assisting that. Of course, having the war behind us in Iraq is one thing. We've got some some good tax incentives that were passed by Congress.
The direct expensing of up to $100,000 is going to help some of the smaller manufacturers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No question about that.
And bonus depreciation for the big
mm-hmm.
ones.
Mm-hmm.
The decline in the dollar, which has been, as you know, very strong,
right.
But it's been declining since early 2002, and that's finally going to help exports, which, of course, is a big thing for our manufacturers, makes them more competitive overseas.
You know,
and I was going to say one other thing that's I think really key is that inventory levels are very low, and mm-hmm. and everybody seems to think that restocking is just can't be delayed much longer.
There's pent up demand. There's going to be some pent up demand there, no question. You know, Ken, I'm certainly not an economist, and the only thing that I am less of than an economist is a currency expert. But it seems to me that a lot of people talk about why is the U.S. you know allowing the dollar to fall, but the truth is I don't know how else you're going to get capital spend. I mean to me this is a smart play to help get capital spending going in this country to improve our ability to export.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, that's well, you know, it's a two-sided coin. Makes it more expensive to import things from overseas, and of course if you travel overseas you're going to spend more.
Just got but back it makes from overseas and it was expensive.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now.
Right.
So you're exactly right about that, but it seems to me that you know the hope. I'd like to think that the powers that be weighed everything in the balance and said, you know what, we probably need to err on the side of getting manufacturing going again, getting some exports going again.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully that that will translate into some improved job creation, which has really been a big problem.
Well, it is. We've got a couple of thousand folks out of work that we didn't have out of work 3 years ago. And of course, there have been a lot of reasons for that. I mean, we were attacked.
Mm-hmm.
We have, we're still paying for the excesses of the 90s. We're still paying for the over-designing of Y2K.
Right.
We're still living with those with the vestiges of that over-designing of our infrastructure.
We have terrific competition from overseas as well, as
yep.
you know.
Yep, and we got SARS. I mean, there's so many things. This has been a pretty tough 3 years in a lot of ways, hasn't it?
Yeah. And job creation, it's still questionable when that's really going to pick up steam.
Right.
But at least it looks like corner's turned here on manufacturing.
But also we also know that employment is a lagging indicator.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It doesn't lead the way. It trails the recovery. Stay by, Ken. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with our good friend, Ken Dalecki. He's deputy managing editor at the Kiplinger Editors. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Ken Dalecki is our guest, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Ken is the deputy managing editor there at Kiplinger. Ken, I mentioned a minute ago that one of the things that was really creating problems and challenges for our economy is the fact that concurrent with the run-up of the excesses of the 90s, the dot-com nonsense, we also had the build-up for and the over-designing of our IT, our information technology infrastructure, getting ready for Y2K, and so
mm-hmm.
we're still eating some of that larder that we packed on there back in 1999, and now some of that technology is starting to get obsolete, and so for that reason, if nothing else, I think you guys are predicting that the IT industry is going to be one of the strong performers in the next few months and year or so.
Jim, as you know, a year, six months is a lifetime in the IT
exactly.
world, and as you say, a lot of companies poured a lot of their energy into getting ready for Y2K and upgraded their systems at that time, and because they did spend as much as they did on that, they've held back on reinvestment,
mm-hmm.
and that stuff's starting to get old, and I myself have a real nice new eMac on my desk now, which I'm starting to play with, and it's pretty impressive.
There are some industries, though, that are not doing well. The telecom industry's still got its problems.
Yeah, a lot of overcapacity there still.
That's going to be there for a while, I'm afraid. And also, aviation industry, you actually say the aviation industry is in a tailspin.
Yeah, well, they've cut spending by 30% this year, the airlines. I just saw the announcement that Boeing got a real nice contract on some of their for some of their new planes, which is going to help in the manufacturing side.
Right.
As you know, they've been in tremendous competition with Airbus in Europe.
Absolutely.
Automakers, they're kind of the victims of their own success in some ways. I mean, the auto industry is still relatively strong, selling an awful lot of vehicles. But they've sold so many in recent years that an awful lot of people are riding around in new cars and don't need
replacements. Well, exactly right. Well, they not only sold cars at a good price, but they also financed them at zero interest rates.
Many of them. And cars are lasting longer these days than the old models that we first bought.
Well, absolutely. but regardless, you guys say that you're expecting steady job growth in manufacturing. I should say that you're not expecting it to really, the job growth, which we mentioned earlier, is a lagging indicator, actually still won't get kicked in until next year sometime.
Yeah, probably mid 2004. Factories are holding back on adding staff, and they're relying on overtime and temp workers and part-timers to fill any growth that they see. They want to be convinced that the recovery is real before they start adding bodies.
If we can grow this economy slowly but surely, keep interest rates low, let the tax advantage, the tax cuts kick in and sort of you know become part of the whole equation. If we can pick up any kind of trade, improve the free trade around the world. And grow countries like grow our markets in places like China and other countries that are emerging, maybe even Russia. We could be with you know notwithstanding anything like a SARS epidemic or some other attack that we might be subject to. I can see where we could be in long term. I'm talking about over the next 10, 20 years. We could be in for a long period of prosperity, at least in the United States, if not around the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are some challenges out there. I mean, Europe's got challenges. Japan is a constant challenge. There are problems out there, but I'm really kind of hopeful long term. And what was it? One of our guests in the last hour, Mike Menzies, talked about the importance of being a distance runner, not a sprinter.
Uh huh. Well, business is cyclical, and I think we're finally coming to the end of the downswing, and the pendulum's starting to come back the other way. At least that's our assessment.
Right. Yeah. the people that I talk to say that they're not counting on 2003 to be all that great. A lot of people were hoping the second half of 2003 would be a good half, but it's not going to be as much. But they're still looking at a good 2004, and so hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Stock market seems to be reflecting a little more confidence these days, and even if things don't change much from where they are now and hold, the stock market would be up 8%.
And that's another good indicator because, as you know, 10 years ago there may have only been 20% of Americans who were invested in the stock market. Now that number is closer to half, 50%.
Yeah, it had been growing steadily. I don't know whether the downturn over the last 3 years has scared folks out of the market, but
when their 401ks became 201ks.
Yeah, and some people did just what they shouldn't do, and that is
get out
and when it's down, and you know, it's just the opposite of what you should do. You should be buying when it's low and sell when it's high.
But, right. Exactly.
It's counterintuitive. It's,
Ken, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the other side of the coin on this airline problems that the airlines are having. That could be good news for you and me, according to Kiplinger. We've got a lot more things to talk about right after these messages with our good friend, Ken Dalecki. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for staying with us. My website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week by email. Ken Dalecki is our guest. He's with Kiplinger. Ken, one of the things that you guys have in your newsletter this week, in your Kiplinger letter, I should say, this week, is an opportunity to purchase a little booklet that I want to tell people about. It's called Think Single, and it's a book about the Kiplinger's produce. It's about sound advice for women of all ages, and whether they're married or single or widowed or whatever. And it's kind of a financial book, isn't it?
It is. The title might be a little misleading. It says Think Single. It's not just for singles,
yeah.
As you point out. It's basically for women to plan their own financial future and what they should know to be secure.
Well, you
whether you're married or not.
You answer a bunch of financial questions in this book, I think. And so if you go to Kiplinger.com, you can find it there by linking over to the women's section. Or if you want to call this number, let me give this number out, Ken, 800-280-7165, 800-280-7165. If you want to order that, I think it's $8, is it? Yeah, $8.
Yeah, $8 plus shipping, and I think there are various shipping alternatives.
Yeah.
So, you know,
or go to Kiplinger.com, maybe type in the Think Single into the search engine. You'll be able to find it a little bit easier there. One of the things that's been interesting, Ken, is, as you know, we were talking about how the airlines are having a tough time, but that's
mm-hmm.
actually, in some ways, that's kind of good for travelers because they've been doing some pretty significant fare cutting in order to get us to come back to the airlines.
Right, 10 or 15% below last year.
Yeah.
And we think those fares will stay that way for the business traveler. That's the good news. The bad news, as anybody who's flown lately knows, is that there probably won't be any relief from the crowded flights.
No.
There are fewer flying options probably until 2005 as we see it, because the airlines are just struggling to turn a profit. They've lost about $8 billion this year.
Yeah.
Because of the slow economy and, of course, the war and SARS.
Well, and I'll tell you, every time you travel, you experience the residual effects of terrorism.
Yeah.
Every time you travel. One guy decides to get on a plane with a shoe bomb, and now I have to take my shoes off and walk around the airport, you know, with my shoes off in my sock feet to get through the thing because my shoe has a metal shank in it, you know, or regardless, maybe they just want to check the thing. I mean, it's really amazing how few people. It's amazing the residual effects, the metastasizing effects of terrorism, isn't it?
Right. Well, the cost is, of course, incredible when you
yeah.
add all that up. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The affecting the airline business is the fact that Congress is going to spend a lot more money on airport renovation, about $3.5 billion in each of the next several years for infrastructure improvements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, that's needed in some places particularly. So and that should be a stimulus to the overall economy. Airports are tremendous assets wherever they are.
You know, Ken, this is off the letter, but you never hear anything about maglev anymore. I wonder why.
Well, the technology...
Magnetic levitation
yeah,
railroads, folks.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. It was that a lot of study was put into that, particularly in Florida, which I'm very familiar with. And, you know, the only way that would make money or be economically feasible, at least in the state of Florida, was not from passenger ridership at all, but from the increased value of property along the railway, almost the way the original railroads prospered.
Right.
And the technology itself is so expensive that it's just not very practical.
But 20 years ago, you and I would have thought that we'd have had a lot of maglev by now, wouldn't you?
You'd have thought. Yeah, you'd have thought.
Yeah.
But I guess the old, just the plain old wheels and track still are very efficient.
And you can
get up to pretty good speeds.
And the wings, too, I guess, with the airlines, just moving people. But they're doing
it in
other countries. Japan and Europe is doing it, I think. France is doing it for sure.
But anyway,
Ken, stand by. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening in the Silicon Valley area. There's some biotech stuff going on out there. And we're going to talk about some other technologies that are new that Kiplinger reports about this week. It's 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah. And sit.
We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, in our show straight ahead, it's going to be the 4th of July. We're going to be visiting with Bob Caudill, who's with the American Legion. We're going to find out some things that the American Legion is doing for our veterans and their families. And then I'm going to talk to you about my ideas on how we began with freedom, how you and I, as entrepreneurs, why and how you and I have the freedom to be who we are and do what we do. And that's going to be on my mind tomorrow. And then we're going to be visiting with our resident historian, Bert Folsom, who's going to talk to us about, we're going to get him to talk to us about some history. And I'm looking forward to getting Bert back on the show. He's a great guy. Ken Dalecki is another great guy. He's with Kiplinger. And, Ken, the website is kiplinger.com. I mentioned that earlier, but you've got a number of publications. One is the weekly Kiplinger letter, which has been around now. You guys are in your 80th year now.
That's right.
And that can be found, you can subscribe to that on the website at kiplinger.com. That comes every week. Then they got three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And then there's a magazine. You guys got a magazine, too, haven't you?
Oh, Kipling's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah.
Yep.
And all those, you can find all those at kiplinger.com. And not only can you buy stuff there, but you can also find out more stuff. They've got quite a bit of free information there on kiplinger.com. So check that out when you get a chance. Ken, have you got the toll-free number if anybody wants to call?
Yeah, I think I have that here somewhere. Let's see, toll-free number.
Find that in a minute, and we'll give that out in a minute. Let's move on down and talk about the biotech hubs that are out there, right? That are popping up around the country. You guys point out that a number of states are looking at these biotech hubs as a potential for a new tax base and for some new jobs, and apparently, the industry revenue has tripled in 10 years. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's got a lot of states trying to promote the biotech industry. New England actually leads in the number of biotech firms, which
give
might surprise people. You know.
Give us some examples of some applications of the biotech. What would that be? Just research and?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of biotech in both the pharmaceutical industry and agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Which can revolutionize how we treat diseases and also how we grow our crops. The states or many states are trying to link their university systems with biotech, providing the support that the industry needs through their university systems. San Francisco is right behind the New England states in the number of biotech companies, but there are others as well, all over the country.
Well, and these are clean industry. This is a clean industry. This is the kind of industry that makes the greenies happy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And you know, once you get a certain infrastructure built, it supports and feeds off itself.
It does, doesn't it?
Builds
it?
Which is true in just about every industry.
That's exactly right. Another thing that you guys report on the tech telecom front is that there's going to be a new smart radio technology that's going to transform wireless communication. What's going on with that?
Well, it's really interesting. It's going to free up space on our cluttered airwaves, so they get more shows like yours on the air for thousands of users, police, fire, and so forth. They're called cognitive receivers that will spot clear communication pathways. And then quickly loop into those vacant channels so that they don't go to waste, so that they're used. That's one big thing.
And apparently it's going to really improve cell service, cell phone service, and wireless internet connection.
Right. Free up more space for those, for their use. Some of the other things we see coming along is what are called software-defined cell phones, and this is kind of neat. This is where you could easily upgrade a cell phone that you have by downloading new software into the phone you already have.
Just like we do now with our computers.
Yeah. That way you won't have to go out and buy a new cell phone every mm-hmm. time something new comes along.
Right.
Another thing coming down is the use of electric power lines for high-speed internet access. Looks like it's going to develop as another option.
Well, that's an area that the utilities companies, the municipalities, are looking into, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they need the new revenue, because as electrical deregulation scans out over the country, their revenues are going to be impacted. These municipalities who have their who are in charge of the local electricity department, their revenues are going to be hurt, and they're looking for new ways to make money, aren't they?
It can be another option. This will be a little bit down the road, probably around 2006 before that becomes prevalent.
Right.
Then there's some other things too. Super fast web access via fiber optic phone lines is probably going to finally pick up steam because of some technical standards being set by the phone companies.
Well, and Lord knows we've got plenty of fiber out there.
Yeah, right.
But we got fiber coming out our ears, really, don't we? I mean, because of all the fiber that was laid in. I've forgotten the percentage, but what we're using now in fiber compared to what's actually in the ground is just a very small percentage
mm-hmm.
of the total fiber capacity that's out there.
So all that's exciting stuff to look forward to.
Well, these are some things that are not exactly earth-shaking events, but they're different little details in the and developments in the tech industry that's going to make our lives a little bit more interesting, a little bit easier, and maybe create some opportunity. That's one of the things we need to happen for sure. Stand by, Ken. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll come back. We're going to talk politics with our good friend Ken Dalecki. He is Deputy Managing Editor of the Kiplinger Washington Editors. Stay with us. Back at 7 till, Ken Dalecki is our guest, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. What Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world. Here's an interesting quote. Here's an interesting comment, folks, right off page 4 of the Kiplinger letter this week. Would a Democrat president be a disaster for business? Now, that's the question that Kiplinger poses. And, Ken, the answer?
No.
The answer is no?
No, it wouldn't be a disaster. Although, of course, nobody would be. None of the current top contenders would match Bush's record or his agenda. But we took a look at the backgrounds of some of the key candidates to see what their past performance has been as far as their attitudes towards business. And it might surprise some folks to hear what it is, mainly because. These guys are all running for the nomination, and to do that, they have to appeal to the activists within their party mm-hmm. who are on the liberal side. And so, obviously, they talk about a liberal agenda, which doesn't usually appeal to most business. So it frightens a lot of folks in the business community. But some of these guys have some track records that. Once they would be in office, business becomes part of their constituency as well as everyone else.
Boy, you guys worked hard to come up with some of these things.
Joe Lieberman, for example, he's been a firm champion of a strong national defense, and particularly with interest in Navy interest in his state.
He's always been a big booster. An interesting guy. No, you're right. I can see Joe. Yeah,
and he's really up to speed on things like insurance and accounting. accounting and brokerage issues, because there are an awful lot of those companies in based in Connecticut, right across from New York. And he's he has supported product liability reform, which has been a major
right.
business interest. And before he became a running mate for Gore, he actually endorsed the idea of a kind of privatization for Social Security. So, you know, all of that mm-hmm. all of that is stuff that interests business. John Kerry from Massachusetts has been a big supporter of this. I know interests you, is expanding loans to small business.
Right.
He's been on the Small Business Committee in the Senate. He's been a champion of that, particularly for R&D mm-hmm. and research and development.
Well, and you got Edwards and Graham and Dean. Of course, Dean's history. I mean, as far as being pro business, I mean, I don't know where that came from, but. And you got Gephardt. I mean, all these guys have, you can go back into their past and you can find where they have worked with business, but are they true believers in business, in the economy being the way to solve problems, the marketplace being able to solve our problems, more of our problems than government? And I think that's where they're going to fall down is that, you know, I think that's where the impasse is between, or whether the tension is between pro-market forces and pro-government forces. And these guys are fundamentally more pro-government than they are pro-market.
Well, that's right. And that's why we'd you know, say right up front that nobody's going to match Bush's pro-business record among these candidates.
Of course, they would say that, you know, look what Bush has done in the last two. I mean, they always say that, you know, he's presided over the losing two million jobs and the economy's faltering and that sort of thing. They blame that on him. Don't they?
Yeah, sure, and you know, that's part of the burden that Bush has got to deal with,
and it's on his watch too. So.
Right, it's on his watch.
Let's move down and talk about just quickly. We've actually got only about a minute.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about the war in Iraq. That's another thing you guys point out this week, and you say we're going to be there for the long haul.
Sure. We're going to be there probably. I would think 5 years is a conservative estimate.
Yeah.
It's just going to be difficult. Hopefully, we're going to get some more support from other countries, and gradually conditions will settle down. But the stakes are too high to pick up and leave at this
point.
No,
you're right. We've got to stay over there. We've got to get some other people involved over there.
And you know, it's changing. It has changed the whole atmospherics in the Middle East. And I don't think you'd see the progress we're seeing right now in between Israel and the Palestinians if it weren't for this.
No question about it. Or some of the possible reforms that may be happening in Iran either. Those wouldn't be happening either.
That's
Ken,
right.
That's going to have to be the last word. Thank you for being
okay,
here.
Okay, Jim.
Good job. Thank you for sitting in for our normal visitor, our normal guest, Joan Pride. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
have a happy 4th of July.
Bye-bye.
Ken Dalecki, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.